Okay, so we are here. We're back. I'm up a mountain. You're
not up a mountain. I'm in my house surrounded by ill cats and terrible technology.
You're not surrounded by terrible technology. You're surrounded by brilliant technology. You're just using it really badly.
But people cannot use. And I say people, I mean me.
Yeah, and we're not even going to talk about how long it took me to find the right software to do this recording today.
Yes, if we are in different places recording in different ways. So we're going to have to smash this together somehow.
Please bear with us.
Apologies for any sound quality issues.
And on that note, I reckon we should have an intro.
Hi, and welcome to If This Film Taught Us Anything, a fortnightly podcast by her, Lorraine Wheatcroft,
and her, Xenia McIntosh,
where we talk about films, what we learn from films, and discuss the many, many questions that pop up along the way.
And we'll play some ridiculous games, get sidetracked, and by the way, there will be spoilers.
So if you haven't seen what we're talking about, come back when you have.
Just come back when you have. Come back later.
That we saw how long ago, Lorraine?
2 weeks or a month or a year. I don't know. It's been a very, very long week.
But we have allowed ourselves time to process because we have learned that we need to process before we attempt to talk coherently about anything, really. And you'd think at our ages we would have known that, but no.
If doing this podcast has taught us anything, is that we need to process things.
It is. It is. So, I'm going to launch into the first thing that this film taught me. Are you ready, Lorraine?
Yes, please. Please do.
Okay. If this film taught me anything, it taught me that I do love a car chase, but only when they are good. Now, I already knew that I loved a car chase because I am obsessed with the Fast and Furious films. Obsessed.
Are we not all obsessed with the Fast and Furious films?
It is something that I have kept quiet because, if anything, I'm slightly ashamed of it. But
I do know this about you, but only recently. And how long have we known each other?
Exactly. 12, 13 years, something like that. I have kept it so quiet because I thought it was something to be ashamed of. But I'm coming out of the closet and declaring that I love the Fast and Furious films. And also, I love a car chase. And the car chases in this were genius.
They were great. Genius. Oh my God.
They were entertaining. They were funny.
The funniest car chases.
I mean, Ant-Man, Giant, using a truck as a scooter as part of a car chase. What's not to love?
And from big car to little tiny car.
Yeah.
Under other cars and all that was so beautifully timed.
Yes.
As well. It was just great.
Yes.
Actually, it was probably... I loved the car chase in Black Panther with Shuri and Okoye.
Yes.
When she's on top of the car.
Yes.
That was brilliant. And that was, and probably until Ant-Man, that was my favourite car chase.
Okay. I'm with you on that because there was Shuri and Okoye on top of the car, but also Nakia driving the car with no shoes on. And that
ended... Oh, yes, of course.
That car chase, I can't help but thinking, if you were a passerby and you saw that car go flying past you with a grinning black woman on the top holding a spear, how terrifying that would be.
In an amazing dress, like in the best.
The most amazing, glorious, like flowy. Yeah, exactly. But I think these car chases might have been even better.
They did edge for me. They edged the Black Panther ones out.
Why? Is it the big and small thing?
It's the big and the small thing. And they were just... the amount of swapping of drivers, the amount of different cars, the hilarity.
Yes. Yes. I do love the idea of making your tiny car drive underneath a car and then embiggening it to make another car fly through the air. That's just a brilliant
way. That was amazing. And I loved that they did it in such a way. You knew exactly what was going to happen.
Yep,
and they set it up so that everybody was going like, and you were just waiting for it. They timed it like the most perfect joke. It was brilliant.
Now, I do have some questions about how long it would take you to drive places in your tiny car.
Yes. Yeah. There because are a lot of questions about movie science. And
movie time.
Movie time. Because the tiny little wheels would go around, like, would have to, you would not be going the same speed.
Oh my God, it would be terrifying if you were in that tiny car.
You'd be slowing down and going at the speed of a Hot Wheels, which you can more or less outwalk if you've ever done a Hot Wheels.
So are we saying that it would take them the same length of time to drive in a Hot Wheels car as it would take us to walk?
Yeah. Do you remember doing Hot Wheels as a kid and sort of running to catch them?
To catch them, yeah, and you always could. It's not that they ever outran you. But they didn't have engines, so friction did slow them down in a way that, you know, they were coming to a natural stop, weren't they?
You know, the revolutions per minute of the wheels would be the thing that slow you down.
Yes.
Because you've got big wheels going at however many times a second, and then you shrink those wheels and it's going to go a lot less distance in the same time, so you'd have to really rev up. You'd get through a lot of petrol.
So how plausible are the tiny car big car chases? Please say that they're plausible. I really want them to be plausible.
I'm gonna say they're plausible just for you. But I think you'd have, if to keep up that speed at the, I mean, look, Michael Douglas is a brilliant genius of a scientist, so I'm sure he sorted it out.
Must have done.
Yeah.
But I will say, it would have to.
There'll be some power exchange thing that happens on the shrinking that means the wheels are going literally faster than light. To get you in that, the same speed as a big car.
It would be terrifying to be in a tiny car going at the same speed as a big car.
Yeah, and the first time they did the tiny car, big car thing, when Waspy goes and rescues...
Waspy?
Well, goes and gets... I can't remember her real name.
Waspy?
You know what her name? Waspy. Evangeline Lilly.
Yeah.
When the first time she goes and gets Scott out of the house.
Yeah.
And takes him in the car. When you realise you're in a tiny car, that made my stomach go, because we watched it in IMAX 3D.
We did.
We watched it in 3D, and at least, and it made my stomach go funny. Only when I realised that it was a tiny car, I went, like, oh my God. Because it was a shock.
But you didn't get overwhelmed and cry in this?
No. I'll explain. I have a problem. I don't know what it is. I get overwhelmed sensorily. And as soon as the IMAX starts,
one more time.
You know, it's the 1, 2, 3, 4 comes towards you. I just
one more
cry.
Time. You get overwhelmed how?
Sensorily.
Right.
It's a thing that I've been to the doctors about it. And
slice.
It's I cannot cope with IMAX. I cannot cope with 3D. And when they do the 1, 2, 3 thing and the sound ramps up and it all of a sudden goes shiny 3D, I cry so hard. What one was it? Oh my God, there was one film. The first, it was Force Awakens, so that was for other reasons as well. I was just really excited and really tired. But the beginning of The Force Awakens, I just sobbed because I couldn't deal with it. And it's really like...
So, that I feel like brings us neatly onto something that this film taught you.
That I love. I love it when films go big and small. And also fast and slow.
Okay.
Those differences. So, Quicksilver in the X-Men.
Right.
Doing the running around and everything's slow and he's really, really fast. I love. And in Ant-Man, when they go tiny, everything else goes big. But also when Wasp makes, she makes a salt shaker massive.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
It was the best thing I've ever seen. And massive ants. Just.
Yeah.
So I think you could put that in any film and I'd be there for that.
I don't know about any film.
Not anything.
Really?
I don't think that every film could be improved by shrinking someone and putting them in great big things. When you see someone running along and everything's massive, it's amazing. And then when they pull out, what
the bodyguards, Whitney Houston and Kevin Costner.
How much better would that be if they shrunk
Kevin Costner
through the crowd, both of them, when he was carrying her, and then they ran through the crowd as tiny little people, but they showed you it, and then they did the Ant-Man thing where they pull away and they show you just how tiny they are. Because every time they did that, and you had the battle sounds and everything going on, and then they pull out and they're tiny and you can't hear anything, and it's just a little squeak. I just love it so much.
I don't know about dance films. I don't think they'd be improved by tiny or shrinking or embiggening.
I think you're wrong, because any of the step-off films,
yes,
if that was part of the routine as well.
You're right.
Getting bigger, getting smaller, getting bigger, getting smaller. Save the Last Dance, getting bigger, getting smaller. Magic Mike, bigger, smaller, bigger, smaller.
Magic Mike, you're definitely right. Imagine, though, I'd just like you to take a second to imagine that you're watching a film and in the middle of it, somebody gets big and everybody pauses and goes, he's too big! And they fall over. I loved that.
Yeah, everybody realizes.
I loved that.
Yeah.
Where Evangeline Lilly, Hope Van Dyne, there we go, Hope Van Dyne.
Hope, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, she looks at Paul Rudd, Ant-Man, when he's giant, and is like, just look of sheer horror, and goes, he's too big.
Yeah. And there is, it is, I think these must be on the... they're on the top edge of CGI now. All of these things are.
Uh-huh.
But this one was so believable. Ant-Man on the lorry as a scooter.
That was brilliant. And I'd seen that in the trailers.
I'd seen that
in the trailers and it was still genius. Still genius.
I didn't see a whole trailer for this before I saw it. I think I saw the salt shaker thing and I thought, I'm going to love this. But I hadn't seen anything else. So that was a big surprise.
Okay.
And I loved it. Big Ant-Man. I just love him.
Okay.
Loved him in Civil War. Thought it was amazing.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, yes, Ant-Man the Wasp's going to be fucking great.
And it was.
It was. There was.
She never went big though, did she?
No, but then they did say about how big was more difficult than small because of the energy thing. And she was very sensible. Hope was a very sensible character who didn't do a lot of very stupid things.
No, that is true.
And she told Scott off a lot for doing silly things, so...
Yeah, but in a way that was good. Like, she didn't come across as a nagging, harpy-type woman. Like, it was just... a partnership where she was like, that was fucking stupid. Don't do that.
Yeah, they were very much equal partners.
Yeah.
Once she had actually got into the Wasp thing and, you know, you knew she was doing it.
So if this film taught me anything, it taught me that it is possible for people to make a film where you've got a man and a woman in partnership as equal partners without the woman having to be a nagging, harpy type woman, where she can also be funny and entertaining.
And also where the love interest part of it isn't massive.
No.
It doesn't overtake the rest of the story. It doesn't stop them doing anything because, oh my God, I can't possibly, you know, do something because it might hurt so-and-so. Guardians of the Galaxy. Infinity War.
Mm.
It was just a nice part of it. It wasn't intrusive. And I didn't hate it. And I normally, if there's a love interest thing going on, I normally hate it.
But I feel like Marvel might be nailing that at the moment.
Yeah.
Because the love interest thing in Black Panther didn't take over either.
No, and that was lovely, actually. Yeah. That was a nice, that was an actual relationship. Yeah. And that's what you feel like with these two.
Yeah.
With Ant-Man and the Wasp, is it's an actual relationship.
Yeah. So.
Oh. Also, yeah. Passed the Bechdel test.
Okay.
With, yeah. In really good ways, because you had the main baddie was...
Of course.
A girl.
Of course.
Like, she was a proper... young lady, wasn't she? What, she really
I think your inner grandma just came out. She just came. She was a young lady.
I'm doing that thing where I don't understand ages. She was anywhere between 15 and 28. I have no idea.
She was a very well brought up young lady, except that she wasn't a very well brought up young lady.
She was No, she wasn't a baddie because she was evil, though. She was a baddie because she was scared.
Whatever.
She was scared for her life. Anyway, we had a really, really good female baddie who wasn't motivated by some, you know, she was basically motivated by fear for her own life.
Yes. However, can I just say, I think we might have had a surreptitious undercover second baddie.
Well...
Because spoilers, and we've warned you before, there will be spoilers. Also, no, hang on. Let's go back a bit. Rewind. We had said that we were going to start by saying that we really liked this film, and we forgot to say that. It has probably become clear already in this podcast that we really liked this film.
Yes, very much.
And that there is a chance that because we liked it, we're letting it get away with much more.
Yes, that brings us to one of your, if this film taught us anything.
Yeah, that if I like a film, I will let it get away with much, much more than if I don't like a film. But I think that also is true in reverse. That if I don't like, that if I have too many problems with a film, it makes me not like the film. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
So...
Yeah, because you can ruin a film for someone by pointing out the terrible plot holes.
Yeah, true. But I feel like... So, we saw Skyscraper.
Yeah.
We had a lot of problems with Skyscraper. Really liked it.
Yeah.
We saw Mission Impossible Fallout. We had a lot of problems with Mission Impossible Fallout. I personally did not like it.
I did not like it very much.
I know the internet is full of people saying it's the best ever Mission Impossible, possibly one of the best action films of the last few years. I don't buy it.
Not at all. Yeah, for one, I don't think you saw, and I kept forgetting the last Mission Impossible film's name and saying Ghost Protocol. It was Rogue Nation, which was amazing.
Okay.
And it doesn't, you know, the new one is not better than that, but I think everybody's a little bit, I don't know, they're just letting it get away with stuff because they like it a lot, maybe.
So there is a chance that I am letting this film get away with nonsense because I really liked it.
But the thing is, it sort of walks in going, you've already seen Ant-Man get really, really big, and you know he's going to get really, really little, and you know the story. This is stupid.
Yes, so. That's exactly what I was going to say. It doesn't ever set itself up as plausible.
Yeah.
So
and
because
I think that's what Mission Impossible did.
Yeah. So because it's implausible from the get-go, you're like, okay, whatever, let's lean in.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was the same with Black Panther.
Yeah.
Most of the Marvel films.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
then actually true. The Marvel I have a lot of trouble with, Winter Soldier, the Winter Shoulders more.
Yeah.
I have a lot of problems with that one, and I will not let it get away with a thing. If ever it's on at home, it's just like, his hair's rubbish, his wig's terrible, I hate fucking hair. But Transformers, I let that one get away with everything because I love
especially
it.
Only the first one though. I won't let the other ones get away with much, but the first Transformers I'll let her get away with murder, to be honest.
Yeah, and I've seen all the rest, but if I feel like watching robots fighting now, I will just fast forward to the bits with robots fighting.
Fair enough. If this film taught me anything, Lorraine, it taught me that Paul Rudd is ageless.
I think it's not. He's not just ageless. He's going back slightly.
Like Benjamin Buttoning? No, that's the opposite, isn't it?
Yeah. He's at least going on a sideways track.
I don't understand. And you know the whole, like, black don't crack, Asian don't raisin. Paul yeah. Rudd don't... What? We can't rhyme it. But anyway, black don't crack, Asian don't raisin, and then there's Paul Rudd. Like...
There's a Venn diagram somewhere where Paul Rudd and black don't crack sort of thing. But no, he's amazing. He's gone. When you look at him in Clueless, that's another one of his films. I was trying to think of his films earlier.
Okay.
But he obviously looks really baby faced there and yeah. young. And it's not like this Paul Rudd looks baby faced.
No.
He doesn't look any older than Paul Rudd in Clueless.
No. I don't understand. It's yeah. And I do think that men at the moment
Yeah.
I think that men at the moment are really benefiting from facial hair being in.
Yeah.
Because I think that facial hair makes a lot of men look hella sexy, where they wouldn't.
Oh, yes. Look. I mean, well, what have we said about, you know, you go to things and there's lots of men with beards
mm-hmm.
and you think, yeah, every single one of you is a yes. But then... I was in McDonald's with Kate a few weeks ago and she sort of like went, oh my gosh, look at all them. And I thought, no, they are just normal blokes with beards. You have been completely yeah. misled.
Yeah. I saw a thing the other day.
If I was dating now, I would want to shave the person I was dating.
Just to check. Yeah, I can
see
that.
They go on about makeup being false advertising.
Get beards. Out of your face. Jesus. I saw a thing the other day that was, it was a picture of a mullet. And like moustache, and up against it was like full handlebar moustache, full beard, shaved sides, top like slicked down. And it was like, yeah. in 20 years, we will look at this the same way we now look at mullets. And I was like, oh God, we will.
Yeah, but I don't remember ever, and I remember the 80s. I was 18 in 99, so I grew up through a lot of the 80s, through a lot of mullets. And I do not remember ever looking at a mullet and thinking, oh yeah.
No, but people did look at them and think it was okay to go out like that.
Yeah.
And nobody looked at the person who was going out like that and said, oh, hell no.
Dude, you've got a mullet.
Sort yourself out. They didn't. So even if it's not like I would ride you hard, it we didn't look at them and go, dude.
But...
No.
Paul Rudd hasn't got a beard.
He's got stubble.
Yeah, but he hasn't got a beard in this or anything. He has never been beardy.
Has he not? No. Is that just a massive digression then about
yeah,
nothing?
I mean, I'm happy to talk about it, but that's not why Paul Rudd is ageless.
It's not, is it?
No. That's why you're finding people attractive.
Sorry, my bad.
This film taught me that Michael Peña is a chameleon.
He really is.
That man is one of the best actors on screen at the moment. He's in Extinction on Netflix. I had to look up to see if it was the same person because I was like, this is that bloke. This is Louise out of Ant-Man. And he was really, really funny and adorable. Like you said, he's just lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And in Extinction, he is not that person. So he's a completely different person. And I thought, oh God, all of a sudden I understand acting.
Yeah, I had the exact same experience when I watched A Wrinkle in Time. When he came on the screen, I was really excited because I was like, oh yay, it's him. I really like him. Not at all what I thought he was going to be. And again, I had that moment of realization of, you're confusing characters and actors again. This is Michael Peña.
I definitely think.
Playing a character and also him in Ant-Man is a character, not him.
It's just because his character in Ant-Man is amazing.
Partly.
He's one of the things.
Partly, but that also brings me back to Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
Because I think partly Paul Rudd is always just playing Paul Rudd.
Yeah, he doesn't act. He's never anything different.
He's just Paul Rudd. So that might be why I was baffled by Michael Peña.
Yeah.
Because
I'm understanding acting again.
Are you?
Yeah, I've never done it. It's not really something I take much notice of. I watch Marvel films, you know. So it's like, that thing where you're different people.
Yeah. except
yeah,
Paul
he
Rudd.
Is always just charming, lovely Paul Rudd.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't know if this film taught me anything because I think it's just a problem I have with her.
Uh-huh.
She seems nice. It's not a problem with her. She's always very good in things. But she will not stick in my consciousness.
Now, when you say she's always very good in things, name five things that Evangeline Lilly's been in off the top of your head without researching it.
Lost.
Mm.
The second episode of Lost. The third episode of Lost. And The Hobbit. They're another film that I have a completely different set of problems with. But I'm sure she's in that.
Okay.
Or is that Kate Blanchett?
No, no, no. She's in The Hobbit. She's in The Hobbit. You're right. You're right.
She
you're
is.
Right.
But yeah, I can't name another thing.
Okay.
But there's something about her. Just doesn't... She slides off of the surface of my brain.
Mm. Yeah.
And she's always just Kate in Lost. It's not...
Yeah, and it takes me...
I couldn't
me...
even remember...
There's a beat.
Name in this.
That's exactly what I was going to say. There's a beat where I have to remember, what's her name? Oh, she's yeah. Evangeline Lilly. And it's not that she wasn't good in this. I really liked her in this. And I think whenever I see her, I really like her in stuff.
Yeah, that's not the problem. It's not, yeah, it's not even that I just think, oh, God, her again.
But I don't find her memorable at all.
No. And her name is Evangeline Lilly. Let's see. You know, it's not like she's just she's got.
She's not called like Sue Smith.
The city.
I'd like you to imagine for a second a Hollywood star called Sue Smith.
Is she's, there anybody called something like that?
She's from Durham,
and she was discovered. She was a supervisor in Iceland.
Yeah,
she was doing all right. She was on the management track, and she had yeah. a flat above the shop. She was fine.
Yeah,
but someone just she caught someone's eye. Producer.
Yeah. Yeah. On a train station platform, on our way to Birmingham New Street.
For a conference.
Yeah, about frozen foods. We digress. Come back.
Reel it in.
But that's Sue Smith. But yeah, I don't... Evangeline Lilly. Yeah, I don't know.
It's... Actually, while we're on the cast, you have another... You have something that this film taught you.
This film taught me... that Lawrence Fishburne is always menacing. It doesn't yeah. matter whether he's playing a goodie or a baddie, he is always just slightly menacing. And I don't know what it is about him, because he's, I don't think his face is particularly menacing. I am always waiting for him to turn. Always.
He does a smile thing. Where he's always, when he smiles, and I love him to death.
Yeah. I'm always really excited when he appears in stuff.
I love. Yeah, very. He's one of them people that if he's in it, you go, well, that's it then.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
I'm going to go and see that.
It's going to be great. And yet.
Like how excited I was at John. I mean, I was excited at John Wick 2 anyway, but then finding out he was in it, I was just like, this is going to be fucking amazing.
Yeah.
But he does this smile thing where he sort of looks up. And does a sort of clown from It type smile.
Mm.
Whatever the situation.
Yeah, because again, Lawrence Fishburne is always just Lawrence Fishburne, I think.
Yeah.
So I love him in Blackish. Have you ever watched Blackish?
Oh, I love Blackish, yeah. Oh
I love God, him in Blackish, in but I'm always
and
waiting
he,
for
he
him.
He plays a slightly different character in Blackish.
He does.
Everything else.
Yes, that's true, actually. But I'm still kind of waiting for him to turn.
Yeah.
And I loved him in CSI.
Yeah.
And yet, I was still kind of waiting for him to turn.
Yeah.
And in this, I was fully expecting him to turn out to have been like a master manipulator behind the scenes
yeah.
or something. And he wasn't.
Yeah, even...
He was just some old guy who was trying to do right by some young girl.
Yeah, spoiler alert, you know, he is not the main baddie. They do set him up to be the main baddie,
yep.
but you find out fairly quickly.
That
there
he's
are a
not.
Couple of times that you go, oh, do we trust him?
Yeah.
But you find out fairly quickly he's not.
No.
And I think it's us going, oh, do we trust him?
Yeah.
The film doesn't let on. You know, the film's like, no, it's a double cross at all.
No. So, Evangeline Lilly's mum is lost.
Yes.
In where? Is
the
Sheila
quantum
Rain?
Space.
That's
she's
it.
In she's shrunk down to past the size of atoms and she's living in this quantum place.
Right. And she's been there for 30 years, right?
Yeah, 30 years.
Because the regulator she
Yeah, and this was back, if you remember, in Ant-Man 1.
Yeah.
He goes subatomic, and but I don't know if he's ever going to come back. And
if this film taught me anything, it's that the power of love will do anything for anyone, right?
Yeah.
So,
I don't know if that's true.
I mean, this film taught me it, so it must be true. That,
yeah.
So Scott's, when he went subatomic in the first one, his daughter's voice brought him back, right?
Yeah.
Right. Now, Hope Van Dyne's mum, whose name is Michelle Pfeiffer.
Is it not?
What's her real her name in the film? No idea.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Right, so Michelle Pfeiffer has gone subatomic and she's been stuck in the subatomic realm for 30 years, yeah?
30 years,
right. She is immaculate when they find
her. She has the most beautiful skin and makeup.
But very natural looking makeup, but makeup.
Yeah.
And she has fashioned herself clothes from what?
From tardigrade skins.
Yeah.
She's remarkably well groomed, good looking and dressed.
Now, if this film taught me anything, it taught me that in a crisis situation, in the subatomic realm, in a lost land, you will always be immaculate. I mean, she is better put together after 30 years on her own in a subatomic realm than I am of an evening going out. Not the other day, though, because I've just discovered rompers and I can't stop lunging and shimmying. But...
Seriously, if you haven't discovered rompers,
go out and buy a romper.
Playsuits, jumpsuits, get out.
Seriously, they are the best. But yeah, she is better put together than I am on most days.
And I was thinking the cardi thing she was wearing was one of those lovely drapey front things, a little bit sort of, actually, Kanye a couple of collections ago.
Sort of a waterfall front.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but it did have the
slight ombre effect.
Edge. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Where did she get the fabric for that, Lorraine?
Again, I'm going to say tardigrade skins. Okay. No, they would be too big.
Mm. So, do you think she spun tardigrades? Yeah.
She's undone something on an atomic thing.
All right. She's undone something. She spun that into
made a spinning wheel.
Yeah.
Then made a loom.
Yeah. And then woven that together. Machine.
Yeah.
I mean, I get that she had 30 years. So yeah, she had time to spare.
Yeah, and she now has powers from being in the quantum realm for that long.
Mm-hmm. But time moves differently there?
Time moves differently. Space, everything moves differently, including psychic powers, apparently.
Oh. Mm.
Because now, it's granted her psychic powers.
Mm. Now, time moves differently in the quantum realm, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does it move faster or slower, or does it just kind of lurch? How differently does it move?
I think it goes sideways for a little bit.
Right!
Then forward. Then it gets stuck in a cul-de-sac. Then it goes on a little bit more. And it has an argument about whether it goes left or right, and the sat-nav might be wrong.
Okay.
Because, yeah, they're... I mean, this was the one thing that, as we, you know, you see in films, the massive weird age gap between men and women.
Yeah.
In films, this was odd because Michelle Pfeiffer aging 30 years, she's got to be 25 years younger than Michael Douglas anyway. And he's aged 30 years and she's aged 30 years. And what age were they in the beginning?
I don't know. But time moves differently in the quantum realm.
Yeah. And I was going to say, you know, and that means Michael Douglas would have had Evangeline Lilly when he was in his 60s.
But this brings us neatly onto the ageing thing. Brings us neatly onto something that this film taught you, Lorraine.
Yes. Yeah, this film has taught me that they have really cracked the CGI youngening of people.
They really have, because that was... terrible not that long ago,
in the X-Men films with Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart. there was a frightening sequence where they're younger and they look unbelievable. They look ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. But also,
I mean, beyond face-tuned, it's terrible.
Yeah. But then also in the Twilight, I want to say the last Twilight film where she has that baby and they age that baby.
Yeah.
That was also so bad. Like, didn't really understand why they needed to do it, because nobody looks like what they looked like when they were a baby. So I don't really understand why they needed to superimpose a 12-year-old's face onto a baby. I don't.
Yeah, of course, it wasn't even a toddler. It was a grown up. But it looked like I said.
It was like it she was like Gollum.
Or when Anton Deck do a We're Old People sketch and they just draw on their faces and put flour in their hair sort of thing. It looked like that.
Yeah. And
it
now
was
this
that bad.
And this film didn't look like that. Like, I understand that they were youngening, not oldering.
Yeah, and they wouldn't have had a lot to do on Michelle Pfeiffer.
No.
Because she looked great. Anyway, Michael Douglas, they had to roll back some years on him. And it looked fine. And Lawrence Fishburne's was amazing.
Yes, but Black Don't Crack, we know that.
It does.
Black Don't Crack,
I suppose,
Asian Don't Raisin, and then there's Paul Rudd.
I've never heard Asian Don't Raisin.
Have you not heard that before?
No, I've never heard that one. Asian Don't Raisin. Mm. But I suppose as well, with Michael Douglas and Lawrence Fishburne, you have got a lot of film of their faces when they were younger.
True.
So you can pull it around. But then you would have a lot of film of Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart
when
they were younger.
Anyway.
But yeah, they have cracked that. Actually, the CGI in this, like I said, with the beginning, is some of the best.
Yes. The CGI was amazing. However, you know what was not amazing?
What was not amazing?
Movie science.
I was just going to say, I think we should have a separate thing about the movie science.
Oh my God, the movie science.
Right, first movie science problem we have is the speed of tiny cars.
The second movie science problem that we had was the shrinking building.
Growing, shrinking building.
If that, look around your house, Lorraine.
Yeah.
How many things are not nailed down?
Literally everything.
Yeah.
Except for the telly's on the wall, but I wouldn't give that a good shake.
Now, if somebody shrunk your house down, bear in mind, we're talking about your house. You live in a flat, right? You're in a flat, an apartment for the Americans. Let's pretend we've got American listeners.
Condo.
Yeah. And I'm in a lodge up a mountain. Either one of these things, if they were shrunk down, a handle was then pulled out of the building so that you can pull it along on wheels. Where did those wheels go when the building got bigger?
Oh, God, I hadn't even thought of that.
Uh-huh.
There were wheels on the bottom when it shrinks.
Yeah. Interesting. And somebody wheeled your house around.
Yeah.
Wheeled this lodge around.
At a 45-degree angle.
Put it in the back of a van.
Yeah, drove around recklessly through many.
Skidded it across roads.
Threw it.
And then they embiggened it again.
Yeah.
My house would have gone to shit. Like, forget this lodge. My actual house would have gone to shit.
I have a feeling that my house would be like when you put dry things in a blender that you think are never going to go into a paste. But actually all of my furniture would be a paste.
Yes. Yeah. And yet every time they did that, everything was fine.
Yeah. And all it would have taken was a thing where they go, I'm just pressing the stick everything down button.
Yeah.
Where they had other things in this that were a solution for a problem.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's always a counter gadget. There wasn't a thing for this. And it feels like such a big thing.
Massive.
I mean, I don't know if that's science or just like a massive annoying plot hole.
I think it's science because gravity.
Yeah, science. And science because they could have invented a thing.
Yeah.
And it would have just been really nice, actually, to see him press a button when they left the building and everything got sucked.
Yeah. Yeah.
To the
surface
it was on.
That would make sense.
And that would be like, oh, that's how you did that.
Now, the other thing is, inside that building,
yeah,
they had like contraptions on the wall, clocks, dials, all sorts that were made of like thumbtacks and paper clips and things like that. It was really cool to look at visually.
Yeah.
I'd just like you to take a moment. When did they make all of those? Did they make them when the building was full sized?
But they can embiggen things with a little thing they throw on stuff.
So you think he made a tiny paperclip dial?
And then it got embiggened.
Stuck. What, took it inside
no
the building?
To do that. There was just no reason
it didn't
to do
make,
it.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, either that building was tiny, they decorated it and filled it up with science things when it was tiny.
Like borrowers.
Yeah. And then embiggened it. Or they embiggened a paperclip for no reason to make a giant dial on the wall.
Yeah, well, you know, you think you've kept the right thing. You just can't find exactly the thing on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
But you know a paperclip will do it. It just needs to be.
It could be that. It could be that. There's a chance I'm overthinking. It doesn't sound like me.
But then she would have, like the wasp would have had to go tiny to stick an embiggening token thingy that they use onto the paperclip. It seems like a long way round of doing that.
A long way round. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
We're nearly at our last lesson.
I know. And we've talked about a lot. We've talked about the younger ring. We've talked about the embiggening. We've talked about smaller ring. I just wish sometimes we could use actual real words, not made up words. I don't mind.
I'm not sure if embiggening isn't a word.
It's not.
Isn't it? No, it is.
It's not.
It's in The Simpsons.
That doesn't make it a word.
It's on a statue in The Simpsons, so.
And we have completed the movie science part of the podcast. On to your final lesson from this film.
This is probably the most poignant lesson as well. So I'm, and it's chronological as well. So massive spoiler alert as well. Like, if you really do not believe us on the spoiler alert, you can go now. But anyway, this is a really serious one.
Serious?
If this is serious.
Sorry.
If this one taught me anything, it's that I am not over Infinity War.
But not only are we not over Infinity War, we were not ready to know that we were not over Infinity War. Because we thought we were fine.
Now, the thing is, you happily jog through Ant-Man and the Wasp. Yeah. You know it takes place after Civil War.
Yes.
And we all know what happened in Infinity War.
Yeah. And they did a very good job, actually, of explaining. We already knew why. Scott. His name's Scott. Jesus.
His name is Scott.
Wish I hadn't just remembered that.
Scott's on house arrest.
Yeah, but in this film, they really tie it up properly so that you know.
Yeah.
Really, really, there was absolutely no way he could have been in Infinity War. You understand that?
Yeah, and their chronology, the way they've put it into the timeline, is perfect.
And that is not always the case with Marvel films.
It isn't always the case. I mean, with a lot of franchise films, but especially with the Marvel film, feels like. Yeah, I'm not sure that could have.
No.
Anyway,
this works.
This works, and obviously it works because of how strict they've got to be about why he wasn't in Infinity Wars and who was in Black Panther and Civil War and blah blah and everything else. The Ant-Man and the Wasp has two post-credit scenes because you get to the end of it, as we were saying, jogs along nicely. You get to the end of it, and it just finishes beautifully, and then. Obviously, Marvel films, you sit around for the post-credits.
Obviously.
And it's the click.
Yeah.
And Scott's been shrunk and he's down in shrinky land.
Subatomic.
And the Van Diems disappear. They go into ash.
Yeah.
Click.
All of them.
They're gone.
And there's just a telephone receiver or something. Dangling.
Yeah,
they're communicating
and
with Scott.
In... You know, they wouldn't have known what was going on. Nobody would have.
No.
So they're just happily doing their experiment.
Yeah.
They've managed to sort of shrinkify a machine into the back of a van. It's all very clever. You're sitting there going, oh, that's clever. Then the ash, the click happens. They turn into ash.
Yeah.
And it was just the worst thing ever. It was as bad as...
The first time.
It was as bad as Spider-Man going.
It's not called Spider-Man.
Because that was the worst thing that's ever happened to
Stop me. With the Spider-Man.
But it was devastating. So yeah, obviously the Van D, them ashing off.
Oh my God. ashing off. Yeah.
Isn't quite as sad as Spider-Man. Which
it's the dangling. Is it a phone receiver or like a walkie-talkie? They're communicating with Scott, aren't they?
Yes.
And it's just dangling and left like swinging.
Well, you see them, you see the ash.
Yeah.
You don't see them go, but you see the ash and you know immediately what's happened.
Yeah.
And he's
because it's
talking.
Comms all over again because he's like, are you there? Are you there? Yeah. And I swear to you, as soon as you have to say it twice, you know they're not there.
So they've gone.
Yeah.
Everybody else, I suppose, is in the process of that happening.
Yeah.
And then what else happens? There's like a
there's
flame or
the
something,
thing that killed
there?
Me, the thing that really killed me was right at the end, it says Ant-Man and the Wasp will return.
Yeah.
Question mark.
Oh, I just got chills.
It was just like, no, that is unacceptable.
Yeah, because Scott is in, Scott's teeny tiny.
Yeah.
In the quantum realm. I don't know if you even know if Hope is still around. You don't know if Louise is. You don't know about the rest of the security gang.
No.
You
but
know
we do know that the only thing
all right?
that what will bring you out of the quantum realm is love. The power. Anyway, we know that, but there's nobody to bring Scott back.
No, there's nobody to bring him back.
And it was like a kick in the taco all over again.
It really was. I got really choked up.
Yeah.
And it wasn't quite as bad. Do you remember when we went to see Infinity War together and it was our... Was it the first time we saw it together? I don't know how many times I've seen Infinity War now.
I want to say I've seen it 3 times.
I want to say 3 times. I know I definitely saw it once with you.
Yeah.
And do you remember at the end, I was just composing myself. And he said to me about Groot, go, oh, do you know what Groot's saying to Rocket? So, yes, thank you. I did know what Groot was saying to Rocket.
Yeah.
And now I've remembered that.
Yeah.
But I felt like that there was this sort of all of a sudden, like, no, I was just getting okay with this.
Yeah, yeah.
And then,
And
again. It brought a lot back. And I just think that Scott was going to be, Ant-Man was going to be.
Not Ant-Man.
Really useful.
Not Ant-Man,
he's
not Spider-Man.
He's going to be so tiny. He's going to be tiny.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't shrunk by his suit, was he? He was shrunk by the machine.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Maybe he can't bring himself back.
Oh, God.
And they're doing this collecting quantum energy thing, which makes me think, haha, this is going to be important for Infinity War.
So I know we said this was our last thing, but it brings me back to a point that I started earlier on and never went back to.
When have we ever got a last thing?
I know. But I think that we might have a secret second/third baddie in this.
Yeah.
Because I think that all is not as it seems with Michelle Pfeiffer's character.
What?
Michelle Pfeiffer's character.
Yeah.
And now she's got powers and everything.
Yeah.
I think that maybe in Infinity War Part 2, she might be a badden.
No! How can't she... She won't be in Infinity War Part 2 because she's gone ashy.
But she'll come back. I don't know where she got those powers from. I don't know who she wrangled. I don't know, what are they called? Tetrahedrons.
Tardigrades. But they're above the quantum realm.
But I don't know whether
it'd
she's
be
had
wicked
to
if
like
there was just a scene of someone riding.
Maybe she sold her soul to the tardigrades.
She just
therefore
this...
she has tardigrade power. I don't know.
Going back to the science things, that there is this mysterious quantum power.
Oh, fuck. We've lost control of this completely. Go on. We were doing so well. Go on.
No, it's just, I think
it's back
important.
To the science portion of the podcast. Yep.
It is important because it's what saves the baddie girl, Ghost, is Michelle Pfeiffer's quantum power and the power of love. Maybe the power of love is quantum power. I don't know. But yeah, excuse me. before. I'm really sorry for that. I'm really, really sorry. And I've just got a feeling now that Thanos is going to be defeated by love. Which, excuse me. Wow. I really hope that doesn't happen. Oh, God, that's going to happen.
God.
Jesus Christ, it's going to be love.
But anyway, so.
Anyway.
My secret theory, and I'm prepared to be proved wrong, is yeah. that the Wasp one, Michelle Pfeiffer, might be a bad one. I'm just saying. I'm just going to put it out there.
I don't see how she can be a badden when she was ashed.
Tardigrade power.
Tardigrade power. Mm. Or half of the tardigrades would have been ashed as well.
Oh, God.
They're a species. It's so depressing.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, right, ready?
Anyway.
Okay, so Shag, Marry, Kill.
Yeah.
Paul Rudd's Ant-Man. That's Ant-Man, not Ant-Man.
Ant-Man?
No. Paul Rudd's Ant-Man. Paul Rudd in Friends.
Yeah.
Paul Rudd in Anchorman.
Oh, that all. Well, push off a cliff, Paul Rudd in Friends.
Why?
Because I can't stand Mike in that.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I'm not the biggest Friends fan in the world anyway, but I hated all of the stuff with him.
Right.
I just didn't think.
What about
it was
when
right.
he played his invisible piano?
He had funny bits. I'm not saying he didn't.
But not enough.
But I just, I did not believe the relationship with him and Phoebe at all.
Okay.
You know, in all the believable relationships in that programme. So, yeah. So, kill him. Shag Paul Rudd in Anchorman.
Okay.
Because, but I really would. I loved him in that.
Right.
Because 60% of the time it works all the time. Which I still say at least 3 times a day.
Oh, God. Okay.
And marry Scott.
Because?
He's great. He's, I mean, apart from his Ant-Man, so he's going to go really big, which is brilliant. Also, really small Ant-Man. That's going to be useful.
Okay.
Or not, you know, sort of relatively small Ant-Man. That's going to be fun. And... Okay. He's just, you know, he's come good. He's a genuine guy. He's got built up a business that does very well before the snap. So, you know, he's got a lot of potential and it's only going up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Would you rather?
Yeah.
If you could only go really big or really small?
Oh, this is an amazing question.
Which would you rather?
Forever and ever.
No, no.
Just sort of temporarily.
When you
go
want
really
to,
yeah.
You only have one or the other of the Ant-Man powers. You can Ant-Man, not Ant-Man. You can either go really big, or you can go really small. Which would you rather?
I think. I think really small.
I just remembered about when he goes to the school and he's stuck at the size of a 5-year-old.
That is one of the best things. But they did it really well because he wasn't just a kid in a suit.
No.
Because he had the proportions of an adult.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Brilliant.
And it was just, I love that suit.
Yeah.
When it goes small, I don't know what it is about the
it's
suit.
It's so funny.
When it's smaller or
and
bigger,
when he,
it's
then he
brilliant.
Had the hoodie on over the top with the long sleeves. It was so good. Anyway, so yeah, would you rather?
I would go smaller because I think that would be more useful day to day.
Okay.
And I think going big, it's sort of, you know, how often are you going to need to scare a baddie? But going small, you can get shit from behind stuff.
Okay.
You can dodge crowds and things without the risk of stepping on them and killing them.
Okay.
Which does worry me a lot.
Okay.
What would you rather?
Small. I thought briefly for a moment there I was going to say big, but no, small. Especially if I have the power to make other things small too.
Yeah.
Because I really like the idea of never having to parallel park again, because I'll just smallerize my car, put it in my pocket.
That was my favourite thing in the whole film, I think, were the cars.
The Hot Wheels. In the case of
in
Hot Wheels.
In a Hot Wheels case, and they were real shrunk cars.
Louise's face. When he opens up the case and she's like,
oh my God.
It was just brilliant, just class. So I like the idea. I do understand that I wouldn't be able to afford more cars because their real cars shrunk down. It's not that they can just buy Hot Wheels and make them big working cars.
Oh my God, can you imagine pulling them back?
So I do understand that at my current earning level, I would not actually be able to have a case of Hot Wheels cars. However, yeah. I do like the idea, though, of never having to parallel park again. Imagine going shopping in Kingston. Lorraine, I'd just like to set a scene for you. Imagine going shopping in Kingston or Croydon or anywhere, really. Oxford Circus.
I would drive.
I'd drive my tiny car.
I'd drive it into the Bentall Centre.
Yeah.
Up the escalators, yeah. Into the shop.
Yeah.
Then I would get out of the car, yeah, tiny, because obviously I'd be in my wasp suit.
I'd drive it into the changing rooms.
And then I'd make myself bigger, put the car in my pocket. I'd drive everywhere. Yeah. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, I'd drive it onto the tube.
Yeah.
You'd have a problem with the gaps.
Yeah,
it's fine. Movie signs, it'd be fine.
Yeah, jump. And yeah, and there's movie signs, nobody really cares.
Yeah. But yeah, I would drive everywhere. So yeah, definitely smaller.
No, I was just trying to think of a shag, marry, kill, but as we have discovered, and I mean, I know this about you, you are the master of these questions.
It's massive.
No
power.
One compares. Literally no one compares to Xenia about these questions. With it's astonishing.
Well, thank you.
Some of the stuff she comes up with.
I'll take it.
Yeah, because I think the three... Oh, okay, then. I'm going to do the same that you do with Paul Rudd with Larry Fishburne.
Larry,
because right. We are close. Okay. So, shag, marry, kill Larry in The Matrix. I know. Ant-Man.
Uh-huh.
And... Ooh. You haven't seen John Wick 2, have you?
I have not. I know it's one of the great sentences of your life.
Damn. Trying to think of another one where... Oh, and Blackish, then.
So I've got The Matrix.
The Matrix. This. Ant-Man. And, yeah, and Blackish.
Okay, well, I'm going to push you around the cliff from Ant-Man.
Really?
Yeah, because he was a good guy, but he wasn't really anything amazing. He was just a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do understand that I'm comparing him in this as just a guy with the guy in Blackish, where he's just a guy.
Yeah, but he
is. But the one in Blackish is top notch. In fact, I think I'm going to marry him and then blow up his boat, because that's what you do in Blackish, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And also, if I marry him in Blackish, that makes me Jennifer... What the hell is that?
You're going to turn into the Nan.
It makes me her anyway, and she is glorious.
And she is amazing.
She is glorious. Like,
yeah.
Everything
could be something to do with Black Jesus.
Exactly. So I'm marrying him, which means that I'm shagging him from The Matrix, which is probably right, to be honest.
I think you're right, because you really would.
Yeah.
Because... Larry in The Matrix?
Yes.
That is peak Lawrence Fishburne.
Yes. Yes.
I feel.
Yes. So you are correct, yeah. So, Lorraine, we have learned a lot from this film. We have learned
a lot.
That building contents never move, regardless of how small a building is.
And how much you throw it around.
Never. We've learned that they've really cracked the CGI youngering.
Yes.
We've learnt that when we like a film, we'll really let it get away with a lot of nonsense.
A lot of nonsense. I mean, we are discovering plot holes.
Yeah.
The more we talk about this.
But I don't care. Because it was great.
It's fine.
We have learnt that we like car chases a lot.
Yes.
I mean, we already knew that, but we like it.
Yeah,
but
the car chases in this were special.
Yeah. We have learnt that... You particularly like things when they're fast and slow and big and small. We have learned that Paul Rudd is ageless.
Indeed.
That Michael Peña is adorable and also a very good actor.
He's a chameleon.
He is. That Lawrence Fishburne, Larry, to his mates.
Larry Fishby.
Larry Fishby is always just a little bit menacing.
Yeah, sinister man. No reason.
And that clothes, hair and makeup in Lost Lands and terrible scenarios will always be
apocalyptic
on point.
Types of, yeah,
there we go.
You can always find something to make a waterfall cardi out of,
always. And we also both learnt that we're still not over Infinity War,
really not.
And on that note, I on think we should note, wrap this up. Thank yes. you for listening to If This Film Taught Us Anything. I've been Lorraine Wheatcroft,
and I've been Dina McIntosh,
and we'll see you next time.